This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, and there's more at the website allbook-books.com. This week, wide-ranging references with regard to the topic of Easter. First, I want to start off with a poem from my book, Impeach the Monsters, New Dawn, Poems and Essays. This was published 2008. And I'm no biblical scholar. There are quotes, various quotes attributed to Jesus that I often quote. And there are some sayings in there that I like, but I don't know much. But I do know that from what I know or don't know, I don't recall there being any humor, any jokes in the Bible. So this is the poem that came out of that. It's called Jesus Cracks a Joke. The archaeologist found it in some cave next to shards of an old vessel that once held new wine. It was a wonder more people hadn't mentioned it before, how there was no record of him letting out a good one. His back to the cave wall, belly rolling like Buddha, long hair tossing about all shiny with the rays of the Galilean sunset as they filtered into the cave. In the distance, wind wrinkling the Dead Sea, wine going down as smooth as a miracle. Anyhow, here's how it goes. A guy walks into a bar and says, "Anoint me with your finest wine." The bartender replies, "Are you the father's son?" And the guy says, "What do you have to do to get a drink around here?" And the archaeologist pictures Jesus slapping his thigh while one of the apostles leans in, pouring the next round, a bit of wine spilling onto the dusty cave floor as the first stars begin to shine. And then another quote, someone who best described my work, I think, many years ago, said, irreverently reverent. So this, I think, would fit the bill. In my recent book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, the word Christ is from the Greek Christos or Krio, the root translation of which is rub or anoint. If in the beginning was the Word, Christ is a healing energy, a greasing of the wheel, a holistic masusaya. Little portmanteau there, masusaya. And the Greek, there's a Greek word, aliephio, is to anoint the skin with oil after bathing or before gymnastic exercises. Encourage, stimulate. A far cry from the Christianity that barged through the gates of Turtle Island. When anointing, the conjoining of hurt and salve allow for the opening of a barrier, providing the opportunity to move through and heal. So that's going by the words that I think Christ energy is a healing energy. So hey, why not a masusaya? Now, as I have said before, I have personal experience. I am not into the institutionalized religiosity of Christianity or Catholicism. I respect people's choices. I have my own personal experiences through the Kabbalah of a kind of personal, what I would call a personal relating or symbolic, archetypical but very genuine experience of what I would call the Christos or the Christine. So there's that said. Now then, on the other hand, I'm going to get into some stuff about, just astounds me about Christianity. But another personal tidbit, Easter. I celebrated Easter as a kid with the family, dyed the Easter eggs, also celebrated Hanukkah and Christmas. But Easter was fun. It was colorful. And I remember my dad hid the eggs, and he always put an egg in my bathroom cup. And the others were different. So the first thing I did when I got up was I went to the bathroom cup. It made me feel like, hey, I'm off to a good start. And then the rest of it was an actual Easter egg hunt. So, with those fond experiences and those positive experiences, not to be negative, but just to me, what is the reality of what is going on? At least from online statistics, 2.38 billion people align with the Christian religion. I don't know how, what percentage. I get lost with all the different sects, Catholicism, Christianity, Presbyterian, all that stuff. I get lost with that. But that's how huge it is. 2.38 billion. Next is Muslims, 1.8 billion. So there, that's a huge chunk of humanity there. And another one aspect I notice is that this guy Jesus was, you know, there's such a love and Christ and God consciousness, then why, for one, why are there all these sects and why is there all these disagreements and fine print about this belief and that belief and who said what and this and that? And then the other thing, which I repeat over and over again because I find it one of the most astounding conundrums ever, is that to my knowledge, there is no physical proof of an actual human being, Jesus. There was the Shroud of Turin, which for a while, then that was disproven. And there are the various biblical references in that, but from what I know, the Bible was written, you know, decades or even hundreds of years after the supposed Jesus. So my theory for many years, having learned about the Essenes, who were a Jewish sect, I think near the Dead Sea or the Qumran or where they found those documents. I forget, the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's it. They found those. Anyway, they put their allegiance with the Christ. But they were Jewish, and it was like a blend of Judeo-Christianity, so to speak. But my theory is that there was a messianic movement in that, because the Essenes, it was about, you know, finding your own inner highest consciousness, your own Christ consciousness. And I think that as I've seen studying geopolitics for 25 years or so, one of the recurring themes is the efforts by the powers that do too much is to stamp out populist movements. It happened with Occupy as a most recent example, the Occupy movement, coordinated effort to stamp that out. So I think in the Roman times, the powers that did too much there, they tried to stamp out this populist movement, and they put it all on an individual. They turned it into ego glorification and the savior and all this very individualistic stuff. And that is the individual that people look to now and revere. Now, you can have an individual experience. I have my own individual experience amongst other individual experiences with various angelic beings and Buddha and on and on it goes. So you can have your individual experiences, but when the whole religious institution is based on this individual, that's where the issue is, and it is also in stark contrast to the indigenous peoples who, when the Bible, you know, came over to Turtle Island, for example, and was forced upon them, they didn't have a awareness of a God, and they didn't have and still don't, that glorification of the individual. Far from it. It was community and communal, and all of nature, everything is equal and related. So it's a stark contrast of cultures and traditions and way and consciousness that is one of the main issues of world troubles. And also what further astounds me is that if we take this premise that there is perhaps never was any particular individual Jesus, but yet still billions of, not only the 2.38 billions of people whose allegiance with the religion, but then you just think of Christmas, that's who knows how many billions more celebrate that. But anyway, that's just such a huge sway based on a premise that may not even be true. And that's what astounds me. And then what further astounds me, is that the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination, going back to the papal documents of the 1450s and onward, those are based on an entity of Christ, under that banner of Christ. And then that has spread around the world and has still is a key factor in legal decisions in the U.S. So the underpinning of the entire legal system in the U.S. and what affects the business and trade and slavery and abuse and all kinds of horrible stuff around the world is based on documents who I would say, you know, blindly or maniacally put all their eggs no pun intended, all their eggs in the Jesus basket but it's not, and that's what runs much of the world. But again, to differentiate, that's not what I consider the true Jesus. The true Jesus is like a heart, it's like a heart space. You know, they say Jesus hung out with the lepers and the whores and yada yada. So Jesus is like a man of the people and compassionate. And so that kind of domination and stuff is the instant, what I would call the institutionalized Jesus or the institutionalized Christ. And then to go one step further, the U.S. you know, political policy, you can look this up, is full spectrum dominance. It's land, air, water, space, technology, microbiology, whatever it is, you know, sort of under this strange premise of God is everywhere and Jesus is within all beings. Well, they take that and make it institutionalized domination. And so that goes back again. So have these roots of who and what Jesus or the Christ may or may not be, and it's a very tangled, and I don't profess to claim an answer. I mean, I have my answer that works for me, but I'm not going to go out there and force it upon others, as much of the proselytizing history shows and the tragedy of all that. But I, you know, I speak my little speak here that perhaps people will find it interesting and change, you know, might look at things anew. And one more bit to add, a book that I have not yet read, but I was at a new used bookstore for local folks in Babylon called the Never Ending Bookstore. Very nice lady that runs it. And it was my first time in, possibly being able to do a program there or have a book signing. And I was looking around, and I wanted to get a book to help her support her new store, which just opened in January. And so I was looking around. I just couldn't find anything. And then suddenly I found this book, and it's by a very well-known critic who I had heard of but haven't read, Harold Bloom. And this was published in 2005. And it's called Jesus and Yahweh, The Names Divine. And what interests me is that he addresses the controversy. So I'll read the back cover. This is a quote, I guess, from the book, because it has Bloom's name on it. There is not a sentence concerning Jesus in the entire New Testament composed by anyone who ever had met the unwilling King of the Jews. And then the blurb states, with so little evidence of precisely who the historical Jesus was or what he said, Harold Bloom uses his unsurpassed skills to examine the character of Jesus, the inconsistencies, the contradictions, and the gospel's flaws in logic. He also explains the character of Yahweh, whom he finds has more in common with Mark's Jesus than he does with God the Father of the Christian and later rabbinic Jewish traditions. Bloom further argues that the Hebrew Bible of the Jews and the Christian Old Testament are very different books with very different purposes. At a time when religion has taken center stage in the political arena, Bloom's controversial examination of incompatible Judeo-Christian traditions may make readers rethink everything we take for granted about what we believed was a shared heritage. A mind-opening and paradigm-changing challenge to Jews and Christians alike, Jesus and Yahweh may well be Harold Bloom's most explosive and most important book yet. And then here's a quote from the St. Petersburg Times. The book is outrageous, nourishingly so. It generates a fierce desire to reread the scriptures. Well, probably not for me, but no offense. And see for oneself whether Bloom is a prophet or a madman. And a little addition regarding the Harold Bloom book. In part one, Who Was Jesus and What Happened to Him, begins, there are no verifiable facts about Jesus of Nazareth. The handful in Flavius Josephus, upon which everyone relies, are suspect because he had been Joseph ben Matthias, a leader of the Jewish revolt, who saved his own life by fawning upon the Flavian emperors Vespasian, Titus, Domitian. Once you have proclaimed Vespasian as the Messiah, no one again ought to believe anything you write about your own people. Josephus, a superb liar, looked on calmly as Jerusalem was captured, its temple destroyed, its inhabitants slaughtered. Scholars assert that Josephus had little or nothing to gain by his few shreds of apparent information about the Galilean Joshua, Yeshua in Hebrew, Jesus in Greek, but so devious was the quisling historian that his motivations, if any, are enigmatic. Josephus allows us to know that Jesus of Nazareth had Joseph and Mary, Miriam, as his parents, and Jacob, James, as a brother, who was baptized by John the Dipper, after which he gathered students as a wandering teacher of wisdom, and finally was crucified by the Roman satrap Pontius Pilate. Reading and meditating upon everything available to me has made me doubt that Jesus was among the multitude of Pilate's victims. The charismatic rabbi of Nazareth was a master of evasions and ironic equivocations, a determined survivor from childhood on. Once his parents had told him that, artisan as he was, his descent placed him foremost in the royal house of King David, whose progeny carried with them irrevocably the blessing of Yahweh. The firstborn of his Davidic parents, Jesus qualified for elimination by the Herodians and their Roman overlords. No more reluctant or legitimate Messiah had existed among the Jews. Heading a nationalist war against the Romans and their mercenary thugs was totally against the nature of this Jewish spiritual genius, who was the legitimate king of the Jews, involuntarily and doubtless unhappily. Jesus was not a resistance fighter, as Josephus had been initially, until he abandoned such ferocious colleagues as Simon Bar Giora and John of Gischala, leaders in the Jewish war against Rome, and saved his own life at the high cost of his integrity and of Jewish esteem. From what I remember doing a quick research, that is one of the roots of anti-Semitism, is the Romans and against the Jews. Towards the end of this little chapter, I follow Gnostic tradition. If only because the Gnostic sayings of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas ring more authentically to me than the entire range of utterances attributed to him in the Synoptic Gospels and in the very late Gospel of John. There is not a sentence concerning Jesus in the entire New Testament composed by anyone who ever had met the unwilling king of the Jews, unless, and it is unlikely, the general epistle of James truly is by James his brother, rather than by one of James's followers, the Ebionites, or poor men, some of whom survived the Holocaust of Jerusalem by departing for Pella in Jordan, obeying James's prophetic command. Readers now, whether Christian or Jewish or Islamic, whether skeptics or believers, need to start all over again in sorting out the hidden story of the charismatic preacher who wisely decided not to become the king of the Jews, but ironically may have suffered as such by Roman hands. And again, I point out that there's no known proof, and the beginning chapter after the introduction of Bloom's book, there are no verifiable facts about Jesus of Nazareth. So again, I add, is it not astounding that 2.3 billion people, Christians, Catholics, whatever denominations, and umpteen more that celebrate the holidays, Christmas, Easter, is that not astounding? bordering on potential fairy tale that governs a little under a third of the human population. So, and one more thing to add to that, and looking, I just searched in my book, Moving Through the Empty Gate, Forest Christ, so it may be the word Christian, but there's 58 instances I mentioned, because my book is a lot about how the Bible and Christianity came to this land, what natives call Turtle Island, and the effect, and, you know, what an effect it has had and still having. So it is a huge, serious topic. As the blurb on the back of that book mentioned political arena, I will end on a entertaining note, because I saw at CNN, now, love him or hate him, you got to admit, Donald Trump is entertaining, if nothing else. So this is at CNN with a 45-second video. Make America pray again. Trump reveals he is selling Bibles. Former President Donald Trump is urging his supporters to buy a, quote, God bless the USA, end quote, Bible for $59.99 as he faces mounting legal bills amid his third presidential run. So after I read that, I thought, oh yeah, he timed that just for Easter. What a salesman. And so I watched his little spiel, and what stood out to me is he says he's telling, quote, all Americans, end quote, to get a Bible. Now that made me wonder, is he genuinely oblivious, or is he just playing the part, because all Americans to get a Bible, when there are, you know, all kinds of the melting pot of America with Muslims and Jewish people and Hindus and Sikhs, and of course to mention native peoples, not of the melting pot, they're here before the melting pot. So where in God's name is he preaching to all Americans to get a Bible? I have no clue, but anyway, so that's a bit of the wide-ranging, long, rambling spiel that ties in with Easter, which also is spring. It is a look at other cultures around the world, and it comes a little bit after the vernal equinox in the beginning of spring, and East is a time of beginning, so that is, you know, flowers are coming up out of the Mother Earth after doing their thing all winter, and the leaves are starting to unfurl, and the plants and things start to emerge, and all that, you know, of course. And that to me is also perhaps the deepest flavor of Easter. So happy Easter if you celebrate, and if you don't and it's just another day, well, take time to smell the hyacinths, which are blooming now. One of my favorite smells, one of my favorite scents with this earth. So thanks for listening, and be well.